ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm Carrington Clark.
And I'm Alan Kohler.
In 2026, business big and small is moving at a rapid pace. And ABC Business Daily is here to help you cut through the noise and spin, Monday to Thursday.
And on Friday, I sit down with business leaders, founders, creators, change makers, and those in the know to ask them how they see the world, because that's business.
All in the ABC Business Daily feed on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
When South Australians went to the polls on the weekend, one in five voters ticked One Nation First. That's the party's best showing in the state ever. Quite the feat for its leader, Pauline Hanson, who says a movement is underway. Today, host of the ABC's AM program, Mel Clark, on how the party is managing to capture voters and how it will translate federally. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Mel, when you talk about a thumping victory, well, that's what it looks like, right?
A resounding victory for Labor in South Australia. Premier Peter Malinauskas returns the party for a second term, even increasing its majority in the state.
Although the Premier Peter Malinauskas, he was pretty humble in his response, wasn't he?
He was, but it is without doubt a dictionary definition of a thumping victory. I mean, this is one for the ages for the Labor Party. I mean, they're looking like they will hold at least 32 out of the 47 seats in the lower house in South Australia. That is a commanding and historic dominance.
More than anything else, tonight I'm overwhelmed with a sense of gratitude. A gratitude to so many people who have provided this government the opportunity to be able to continue to serve.
But you're right to point to Peter Malinauskas' comments. I think he was very clear when he was talking about in his speech that, you know, this might be the best result our party's ever achieved, but it's important no one confuses tonight's result as adulation.
Instead, we should see it as only being an invitation to continue to work our guts out.
And that really is recognition from him that the level of support here isn't entirely an endorsement of Labor in South Australia. To a degree, this is a rejection of established parties. And One Nation has campaigned very heavily against what they call the Uni Party, which is them describing Labor, Liberal, Nationals all combined together. Mm. And that seems to have resonated. And because the Liberals haven't been in a good state, it has really impacted them. Yeah. But it could impact Labor too.
Yeah, and that's why I guess so many people are now focusing on One Nation and how people voted at this state election, because it's very clear that Pauline Hanson and her party, they cut through.
The cut through is significant. That probably is underplaying it. I mean, it means that more than one in five people in South Australia are putting One Nation first. Mm. And when it comes to individual contests, One Nation is finishing in the top two in around half of the state seats. So even where they're not winning seats, they are the major challenger. So if we just take stock of what that's going to ultimately mean in the South Australian Parliament, in the lower house, they've definitely picked up one seat from Labor, the seat of Nadjeri, and it's in contention for three others. That counting is still going on, although preferences might save the other parties. Mm. In the upper house, they're projected to win two seats. There's definitely the possibility of a third, but that means the new party leader in South Australia, Corey Bernardi, will have a team to work with in both chambers.
And we will make the Red Party and the Blue Party, the Uni Party, take notice that the orange wave is here to stay.
And the significance of that, it really can't be underestimated, can it? Because Pauline Hanson has been around for what seems like forever in the federal parliament, and now she really does see her party as a growing force, and she's right, isn't she? It is a growing force.
It is a growing force, and it is undeniable, and these election results confirm that polling results that showed support for her party increasing wasn't just a whimsy of an answer from people speaking to pollsters. They're willing to put a number one next to One Nation on a ballot paper. Pauline Hanson's been very clear to say that she thinks this is just the start of it.
Today, it's not about Pauline Hanson. It's not about the members getting elected. It's the start of a new beginning for the people of South Australia and the people of Australia. It's for you, you the people.
Let's look at this South Australian election. And the seat of Elizabeth in South Australia is really interesting. It's a working class suburban seat. It's where the old Holden factory used to be in South Australia. So very solid Labor seat, very safe, clear margin over the Liberal Party for living memory of political history. But what we've seen in this election is it is now an ALP versus One Nation seat. The ALP primary vote is 41.5%. The One Nation primary vote was 32.6%. That is a real threat to Labor seats in those suburban areas. And if we look at what that might mean for Labor, you know, federally, the sort of equivalent seat or the seat that takes in Elizabeth is Spence nationally. That's also a really safe seat for Labor in Parliament. Mm. Less than a year ago, the last federal election, One Nation only got 9.5% of the primary. So in this area now, it's getting more than 30%. So you can see how much has changed in the course of a year.
Yeah, and such a rapid turnaround. So just before we move on then, Mel, because I think this is a question that people have in their minds, how would you actually describe One Nation as a party? Can we compare, for instance, Pauline Hanson with, say, Nigel Farage in the UK? You know, where does it sit on the political spectrum?
Look, you'd absolutely characterise them as a populist party, mm-hmm. and they focus on the same themes that populist right-wing parties worldwide focus on. Their concerns about immigration, concerns about national identity. They have a desire for a strong self-sufficiency for the nation. So they support strong governments in economic matters, but they want government limited on social matters. If we're trying to compare them overseas, I mean, I think there are similarities with Nigel Farage's Reform Party and with the National Rally led by Marine Le Pen in France in terms of those key issues of immigration and national identity, but also in terms of the voters that they target, you know, the communities that have lost out from technological transformation and from globalised economies. I think one of the really interesting differences, though, is that Nigel Farage and Marine Le Pen and their parties have been able to build really strong structures that mean they've been able to build broad support beyond their own personal appeal. And Pauline Hanson has really struggled to do that over decades. I don't think it's a coincidence that she's having more political success now. I mean, partly it's that the political times suit her, but her party has become much sharper in its political operation since it's had a change in those running the machinery of the party behind the scenes, and that seems to have made them a much more effective political operation.
Mm, and, of course, this really worries people like the South Australian Premier Mel. In his victory speech, he advocated for patriotism but not brash nationalism. He was really quite strong on this, wasn't he?
We can and we should wave our flag with pride, knowing that Aussie patriotism sometimes means sitting with a stranger and having a cuppa or a frothy and arguing about the footy, not our faith.
Just explain that.
I think in saying that, Peter Malinauskas wanted to acknowledge the disappointment with major parties, particularly when it comes to that idea of showing pride in the nation, not just arguing about who's getting it wrong or how things should be better, but also try and take some of that debate about nationalism and patriotism, which is really emotionally potent, but it's quite amorphous, and take the debate away from that by accepting some of that premise that pride in the flag is important and being proud of the nation is important, so that you can then focus on the policy argument. Because for Peter Malinauskas and the major parties, that's something they can much more easily defeat Pauline Hanson on than an emotional debate about patriotism.
Well, Mel, of course, we have another very significant election coming up in May. Now, that's the by-election for the seat of Farah, which has been left vacant by the former federal opposition leader, Susan Lee. Now, this will be another real-time test of just how well One Nation is doing.
It certainly will. Now, the polling that we've seen shows that One Nation's vote has been rising dramatically across the board, and that's been reflected in Farah too. I think it's really interesting to look at one of the South Australian seats of Chaffee, which kind of covers the area of Renmark. So this is a town around the Murray River irrigation. It's in the border up against Victoria and New South Wales along the Murray River. So a lot of similar industries and a lot of similar concerns around things like water buybacks, cost of living, cost of fuel. The swing against the Liberals in Chaffee in this state election was 19%, and the swing to One Nation, 24%. That's huge. If you were to see even part of that replicated, that would give One Nation a very good chance of success in Farah. But it gets a bit more complicated because there's also a community independent in Michelle Millthorpe who is garnering a lot of support in the campaign as well. So it's very hard to know and predict where the chips are going to land in Farah because it is a bit of a unique contest. But this is kind of what we need to get used to in politics in Australia. This is no longer the Liberal-Labor or the Coalition-Labor contest. They're much more multifaceted and therefore much harder to predict.
Yeah, and just to note, Labor has decided to stay out of the contest because, well, basically it can't win it and never has. Well, Mel, let's consider, I guess, what is driving voters towards One Nation. What do you think we can read into this shift? We know the coalition is in dire straits, but is that it? Is that the only reason?
It's definitely not the only reason, although it's a factor for sure. I think if we look at mainstream Australian politics, it's actually pretty narrow compared to the US or the UK or European nations. The major parties here are politically actually quite close. For all the rhetoric and the bluster, there is actually a lot of consensus around things like, well, we agree that there's a fiscal approach where we want lower debt and we want to have budget surpluses. But the argument is over how to get there and how quickly to get there. You know, there's agreement in the major parties that we need social supports and universal health care. The argument is about just how far those benefits should be extended. So if you're dissatisfied with the direction of the nation on the whole, and you think significant change is needed, then switching from Labor to the coalition or coalition to Labor isn't really going to deliver that for you. Mm. So One Nation is really benefiting from people who are frustrated with the system as a whole. And the personal appeal of Pauline Hanson remains. The consistency of her message is really key. If you were looking to send your vote somewhere that's not the major parties, you have someone who, whether you like all of the details or not, for the better part of 30 years has had a consistent message. So she has authenticity in that process. And that's really powerful at a time of distrust and frustration at the major parties.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the next federal election, of course, Mel, is not until 2028, but I assume the government and Anthony Albanese will be watching this very, very closely.
There's a really big risk for Labor. I mean, they can't rely on that dissatisfaction paying out on the coalition parties. I mean, One Nation, other minor parties, other independents, they all benefit from frustrations with the major parties and particularly the government of the day, if they're not seen to being up to the challenges of the time. And if we look at where we are right now, I mean, there's an oil shock, the possibility of a recession. I mean, these will be big tests for the Albanese government, and voters have shown they're prepared to deliver their judgment on that at the ballot box.
But Mel, still, let's face it, Labor is in a pretty strong position.
Absolutely. They have an enormous buffer. If we look back in history, you see when your opposition is in a period of disunity, that certainly helps one party stay in power. One Nation's rise poses a challenge to both Labor and the Liberal Party. But so long as the Liberals and the Liberals and Nationals combined are struggling, that will ultimately help the Labor Party, which means at the moment, One Nation's success is helping keep Labor in government.
Melissa Clark is a political correspondent based in Canberra and host of the AM program. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Don't forget to follow us on your app if you haven't already, so you don't miss an episode of ABC News Daily. Thanks for listening.